Chainsaw History Time.
Welcome to the bonus episode of Chainsaw History, everybody. Today, I am the sub-co-host, Jamie Chambers, and this is my sister, Bambi.
Hello.
Who will be taking the reins today. She has done her own research, written a script, seen a musical.
No, not just once, but a whole bunch of times.
She has done what you would call a deep dive. And so today, I get to sit back, listen to what she has to say, and react.
Yeah, your long-belated birthday present.
Woohoo! It's called low-effort content on behalf of me.
Yeah, and I worked very, very, very hard.
Yes. Like
on this for like months.
Wrote a script and then threw it in the trash and then wrote it again.
Yeah, and then pretty much this one's going to be thrown in the trash too. I'm just...
Well, here's the secret. As a writer, let me tell you something. I forget. I will get the quote wrong, and I don't even remember who said it, but it's basically the idea that writing is never finished. It is only released or just done. You hit your deadline and it's just done. You're never, ever going to be happy with it, and there's always more you could do. But that's why deadlines exist. Otherwise, no one would have ever written the first fucking thing.
Yeah. So let's just start.
So who are we talking about today?
Today... we are going to talk about Eliza Schuyler Hamilton.
Eliza Schuyler Hamilton.
Mm-hmm. The long-suffering, maligned wife of Alexander Hamilton.
Hey, I've heard of her.
You have heard of her. I was introduced to Eliza, like many of you, through Hamilton the musical. We start our journey with narrator Aaron Burr and the cast weaving the story of Alexander and his life in the Caribbean. We follow him through his life and ends after his death with a brief telling of Eliza's accomplishments. We see Alexander reunite and he leads her to the front of the stage in the spotlight. Eliza looks to the heavens with the final line, "Who lives, who dies, who tells your story?" The lights go up and the cast takes its bow and the audience is left with the notion that Eliza's story was told. That would mean she plays a supporting role in her own life.
Well, in the musical, and it was very much inspired by Ron Chernow's biography, which I have read.
Yes.
That she...
I have, too.
She kind of comes across as a supporting player in the greatness of Alexander Hamilton, and her function was just to keep him from being forgotten and for his enemies from bulldozing his legacy, because that's all she cared about. Well, at least according to the...
The misogynistic bullshit book that this musical was written on.
That was the impression left, which he also wrote the biography of Washington I used for our very, very firstest episode ever.
Yeah, well, I read that book, and that's 30 hours of my life I will never get back. It was horrible.
I don't know about horrible, but it definitely, I would call it definitely a particular viewpoint.
Yeah, I mean, he literally chose what he wanted to use.
It's a polished version of Alexander Hamilton, a semi-apologist.
It was very biased, and it was very just, he told the story of Alexander Hamilton from one angle, and that angle was the best one that he could muster.
I mean, he showed some rough sides to Hamilton, but he definitely, like, smoothed some stuff over for sure, and it definitely kind of elevated him as this sort of misunderstood, heroic character. Which I think, you know, years later is definitely overstated, and he fell a little bit too in love with his subject.
He was very much in love with him.
Because I think he was a lot harder on Washington in his biography than he was on Hamilton in his, but, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't there when he did all his research and coming up with his viewpoint. I mean, I thought he was a very good, just once again, for like anything in history, don't ever rely on one source. You need multiple sources and viewpoints to begin to get like a three-dimensional viewpoint of anything.
Well, that, and he, like, especially with Eliza, because I thought there was just not any information. I really did. Especially when you read the book and learn that a lot of her letters and writings didn't survive.
Yeah. And the truth was that he really was only interested in her
as a
supporting character in Hamilton's story. Just like, then again, Hamilton, you know, was a supporting character in Washington's book.
And again, I can accept that, except for the fact that then we have this musical, and at the very end, it's like, look, we told her story. It's like, no, you told like three things about her.
Well, I mean, the whole point was like, she's the one who told his story.
And yeah, she was.
And to me,
the ending was a total sloppy blowjob. It was, you know, the whole musical, it's like a blowjob. It's fun. But the end gets real messy.
To me, so the end of the musical, Lin-Manuel Miranda pops out, and like at least the way I read it is that he stopped being Hamilton by that point, and he literally was like Lin-Manuel Miranda guiding Eliza Hamilton out into the modern thing so she could see the audience of the actual modern thing and see that her goal of telling her husband's story was achieved, and that's why she gasped, and it wasn't that her story was told, but that she had succeeded in telling his, which was her whole point in life, apparently. Which, again, that's reducing her to, I am just here to service the title character of this musical.
Yes. His human concubine.
So allow me to say, so I'm guessing here that you have some stuff to say about all of that.
I do. I have some stuff to say.
Let's do it.
When I was first introduced to the musical, I loved it. I was obsessed with it. And I really wanted to read her biography and straight up couldn't find it. At least it wasn't released on Audible yet. It might have, it was probably released on hardback. And I think I was like, I'm not going to pay for a hardback book. So kind of on a whim a few years later, after rewatching the musical, I found it.
It finally
appeared. So I was really, really excited. So before we begin, let's acknowledge that I did have, I read many books and there were sources. So my main source, and anytime I quote like the book, this is the book I'm talking about because it's the only biography on Eliza Hamilton. Eliza Hamilton, The Extraordinary Life and Times of the Wife of Alexander by Tyler Mazzeo. Alexander Hamilton by Ron Chanel. And I also read Founding Mothers by Cookie Roberts, which was really fun. I didn't have a whole lot about Eliza and what it did have because it was written in a certain time period and it was written about several women, not just her. So it was Eliza as a feisty old lady, but it was still a cool read and I got a cool little couple of things out of it.
Okay.
And then, of course, Hamilton the Musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Ah, yes, back when that all seemed so new and fresh and not tired and overdone.
Yeah. Okay, so the book wasn't what I was expecting because I really didn't expect her to have led a full and interesting life without her husband because that's kind of how it was portrayed.
How was such a thing even done?
Yeah, it was extraordinary is accurate. She really was like this force of nature all by herself.
Well, that's cool. I look forward to hearing it.
And it wasn't even just her. Her family was really interesting and really large. She had a very large political family. These were like the Clintons of their time.
Yeah, they were a political, they were like one of the richest families, in New York.
Yeah. And in so many ways, she was extraordinary. Okay, so there's a little back and forth because I'm going to use the musical as a timeline.
Okay.
And the musical is sloppy in time. So, like, act one is really straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Act two is kind of a mess. So, we're going to start our musical. And I'm going to have to Ben Shapiro this shit, so buckle the fuck up.
Ben Shapiro?
Yes. I had to do that. I had to watch this musical and I had to turn the musical on. By the way, they have, on Disney, they have all the words. They have a sing-along version. So that was very, very helpful when it came to this, especially it's like when you're having to quote lines and pick out little things. I felt like Ben Shapiro in the Barbie movie. With my pencil, trying to just get in there. But at the same time, I do love it. I don't want anybody
love
to...
love this thing that you
I
hate.
Love this thing. I don't quite love it as much as I did. I almost wish I have never started this terrible project, but here we are.
Now, welcome to my world where you destroy the things you love.
Yes. So, Act 1, the correction of character assassination of the Schuyler women.
Ah.
So we are introduced to Eliza and her sisters, Angelica and Peggy, song 5, the Schuyler sisters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where apparently they're just boy crazy and going downtown to watch the construction workers.
Yeah, and the basic characteristics of these women and how they're portrayed is completely wrong. Like, he didn't even get them as people right.
I mean, they weren't just horny women running around yelling politics at random construction workers in New York.
They weren't. They weren't construction workers. They were students.
Yeah. Whatever.
There were students in the common just to watch them talk.
Yeah.
I told you I saw this a few times. Okay, so Angelica bounds on stage and she's bold and forceful, followed by an eager Eliza, fresh-faced and earnest.
Peggy's just sort of there.
And no, she's kind of pulled along and upset and unhappy. And the first few lines of this song establishes ideas that are fundamentally wrong about the sisters. But let's pin that for a minute and go back to the beginning. Eliza's beginning.
Doodle-doo-doo. Yep.
So Elizabeth Schuyler was born to wealthy and influential parents, Catherine and Philip. Catherine Van Rensselaer Schuyler, known as Kitty.
That name sounds like money.
That name was lots of
like
money.
Like she was just born into a pile
she
of gold.
She was born into a pile. Well, mostly it was a land. Land, land, land. She had lots
this
and
is
lots
America.
Of land. And she was wealthy, and then she married an also wealthy Dutch man. These people were very intertwined, very intermarried. And there were several families that were connected. The Livingston family, the Schuyler family, the Van Rensselaers. They were all family connected. So they were all cousins and...
Yeah, they were the upper crust, all mingling and intermarrying.
And this was Albany, New York. So it's upstate New York. Okay. And Philip was a general in the Continental Army. So for the most part, we're going to call him General Schuyler. Because there's a fucking lot of Phillips.
A lot of Phillips. Yeah. There's at least a few that I know of. And you probably know of even more.
Yes.
Okay. So General Schuyler...
Yeah, and so they were wealthy Dutch land and slave owners.
They sure were.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth was known as Eliza, or affectionately Betsy. Mostly, she was with her family circle. She was called Betsy. And even Alexander referred to her as Betsy in his letters and things.
Right, so that's
whole
what
lot.
The people close to her would call her
Betsy.
Betsy. Okay.
And then she was all, but she was Eliza to everyone else.
That was more of her formal name.
Yes.
Okay.
Because, again, there was a fucking lot of Elizabeths.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Lot of Elizabeths, lot of Catherines. So many. Okay. She was the second oldest child of 14 Schuyler children, only 7 making it to adulthood.
And that was all one lady popping this out?
One lady. They were fucking human pet suspensions.
What a hero.
And let me tell you something about these sturdy Schuyler women. They were fucking hardcore baby makers.
Good birthing hips.
Oh, yes. And none of them died in childbirth.
Yeah,
which was crazy.
Those good Dutch genes.
Yep, they just fucking just... Let's, popped open their legs and popped them out.
And then put another one in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep this
These
going.
Women were goddamn kangaroos. Yikes. They always had one on the hip and in the pouch.
No thanks.
Yeah.
And how, I mean, and those, and that's back in a day when, like, sometimes several children wouldn't make it past infancy.
Yeah, and again, and now the children in those families, like I said, she had 14 and only half of them made it.
Which is about right for that time period. Because
even rich
people would lose half their kids.
They had 7 fucking kids.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
I can tell you. I can tell you from personal experience that 7 is a lot.
Yeah. Eliza was closest to her older sister, Angelica, affectionately called Anne, and her younger sister, Margarita, and they called her Peggy.
I like Margarita.
If I tried to name my daughter Margarita, people would just think I'm a drunk.
Because Margarita didn't mean what it means until the 20th century.
Yeah, America, we change things.
But yeah, in the musical, Peggy is just sort of there and then just... immediately forgotten. She's just there for that one cast member to have something to do in Act 1.
And that's really sad because Peggy was a huge part of the Hamiltons.
Yeah,
lives.
even in Ron Chernow's biography, she was mm-hmm. like a significant character going on. But like I said, in the musical, she's just there for that one scene to be kind of mentioned.
They mentioned Philip Schuyler more than they showed him. They only showed him like once.
Yeah, he was just
kind of there.
To be fair, they didn't have 20 hours to make everyone a real character.
Oh, yeah. And again, of the things that I'm going to, I don't want to nitpick it, but I feel like the character assassination of all these women, because it's like he didn't character assassination fucking anybody else. It was just the girls. I mean, hell, the musical felt like a love letter to Aaron Burr just as much as it did to Hamilton.
Or at the very least, an apologist of Aaron Burr. It's like, you know? Yes, he was bad, but look at where his head was at.
Yeah.
Feel sorry for this guy. And then when you look at him, you know, I don't know if it'll ever happen, but he is on my chainsaw history hit list because... So I was surprised.
He is a motherfucker.
Piece of shit. Yeah. And I was just surprised. I just sort of assumed that after the musical that someone would immediately want to pick up that thread. It's like, oh yeah, look what this asshole did the rest of his
life. He's a treasonous motherfucker. He tried to steal the Louisiana Purchase.
So yeah, we'll get into Aaron Burr another day. But yeah, he definitely deserves... this musical makes wow, what a complicated guy.
No,
it's like he mostly sucked.
No, he pretty much mostly sucked. So,
but anyway, about the Schuyler sisters, mm-hmm.
The girls grew up in a large plantation known as the Pastures in Albany, New York. The Pastures bordered on the frontier during the French and Indian War. So, General Schuyler, he was a general in the Continental Army. First for the crown, and then for America.
In the French and Indian War?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that war started by a young dude named George Washington.
Yeah, like George Washington. Throwback. And General Schuyler was an emissary for the crown during the Grand Indian Council of the Six Nations in 1770.
Ah, yes. I remember we talked about that, too.
Mm-hmm. Eliza was almost 13, and her oldest brother was only like 5. So instead of taking a son, which would have been traditional, he took his favorite daughter. So at 13, Eliza got to go along and was, first of all, she could also speak some Mohawk because she had been introduced to Native children very young.
Well, that's something you don't hear because about in the musical.
Yeah, she was an emissary. He was an emissary to the Iroquois.
That's super cool.
So he decided to bring his daughter along, and she was inducted into the tribe in a naming ritual. And she was called One of Us. Eliza was so proud of this.
No, I know this didn't happen, but in my head now I'm going to imagine her actually shaving into a full mohawk.
Right? Run away, Eliza. But she was
so much happier.
But yeah, she was really proud, and she could run and climb and weave as fast as the native children. Nice. So she was like a tomboy, and she was proud of herself for it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. As an older child, she was sent off to join her older sisters at boarding school.
Looking like a proper rich girl.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to press play on our musical for just a second. So Eliza, Angelica, and Peggy are on stage, and Burr informs us that the girls snuck into the city.
This is while Aaron Burr is talking about his own prowess as a sexual conquistador.
Mm-hmm. So, Peggy. Daddy said to be home by sundown.
Daddy doesn't need to know. Daddy said not to go downtown. Like I said, you're free to go. But look around, the revolution's happening in New York. New York.
And then,
bad enough daddy wants to go to war. People shouting in the square. It's bad enough there'll be violence on our shore. No ideas in the air.
And it's like, okay, so that's all wrong. Let me read you a passage out of the book for a second. And this is so, quote, before long, their younger sister Peggy joined the two older girls at school in the city. And each girl had her own family and role and personality. Angelica, the most sophisticated and socially ambitious of the three sisters, she thrilled to romance as she discovered in novels and poetry. Quote, a very pretty young lady, unquote, as one visitor noted emphatically. She looked the most like her mother, who had been a beauty. Angelica was also a flirt and obsessed with the social graces and accomplishments that would make her a fine lady. Peggy, on the other hand, was dark-haired, plump, and some said the prettiest of all three sisters. With a sarcastic sense of humor that intimidated those less clever and less witty, she also possessed the lion's share of family musical talent and played the guitar with real skill and sang in a clear soprano. She also inherited her father's imperious demeanor, and she and Philip Schuyler clashed on more than one occasion. She was his willful child, and with her saucy tongue, his most exasperating daughter. Eliza was the classic middle sister, the peacemaker. She took after her father with a strong, bone-faced, a bit too thin and angular to be considered beautiful on a young woman. She had an enviable figure and a healthy athletic build from hopping over fences and riding horses fast. But she had a stubborn independence and a native modesty that made it easier to overlook her among her flashier sisters. Eliza was, as someone knew her said, a brunette with the most good-natured, lively dark eyes, which threw a beam of good temper and benevolence over her whole countenance. Angelica was the socialite, and Peggy could be the lavish rebel. Eliza was a quiet force that kept the three sisters together, unquote. So we can see that the characters of these women for the first line are fucking wrong. Like, Peggy.
She's the one who would have been leading the charge or playing her guitar and yelling at her father.
Yes! She would have been the one sneaking into the city without daddy's permission, but there was no way in hell Eliza would have done it. She was dutiful.
She was the good girl.
She was the super good girl, and she was daddy's girl, too. So she would have never done anything daddy disapproved of. Angelica, maybe. Peggy, absolutely. She would have been the one not hiding in the background. She would have been the one fucking going off.
All right.
So, unpause, and we see the girls strolling along the stage, Angelica reading, Eliza next to her holding hands with Peggy, and Aaron Burr comes along and sings at Angelica. And she says, "So men say that I'm intense or I'm insane." This would have not been true at all. Not for Angelica. Both men and women found her to be intelligent, sweet, and charming.
For everything I saw, like, everyone was enchanted with Angelica.
Oh, yeah. And Peggy was the bold one. She would have been the one in his face, not Angelica. So it's very, very wrong. And it's like, oh, I'm so intense. But again, no, she was just sweet and charming.
But this is beautiful. About telling Alexander Hamilton's story in the musical, which is all about the kind of characters we're trying to establish Angelica and Eliza to be for the purposes of that story.
Yeah.
Not about historical accuracy.
Yeah. And, you know, we see Peggy, who would be, like, intimidated, but she wasn't. She was bold and fun. She liked to drink and tell inappropriate jokes. Women didn't like her very much, and she hung out with the boys more because she found them intelligent, and what they had to say was important, where young women chit-chatting and gossiping just didn't interest her at all. And also, this song is about New York City, and the girls didn't leave Albany until after marriage.
Right, well, wah, wah.
Wah. Now the musical shows Alexander through the early stages of the Revolutionary War. Eliza and her family had their own part to play. Philip Schuyler worked as a general and a spymaster. He used his daughters Angelica and Eliza to ferry information.
Nice.
The book described the situation as, quote, "They weren't spies, but they weren't not spies either."
They were, unquote. At least, so they were like couriers.
Yes.
Spy information.
They did. They were mules. They were mules
for the revolution.
For the revolution. And of course, they could have been caught and it could have been bad.
Nice. Well, that's cooler than, well, we were just at a party once.
Yeah, very much so. And also during the Revolutionary War, her father's house was used to house not only incoming officers from America, but they also used for captured British officers as well. She met a lot of interesting and famous people, including Ben Franklin. and one British spy master, John Andre. And Eliza actually developed a really girlish crush on John Andre. And Eliza and Peggy actually made really nice impressions on all of the officers and soldiers that would come into the house. They would, even the British officers would have toast to the beauty and graciousness of Eliza and Peggy.
Oh, that was the powdered wig era.
Mm-hmm. But like... yeah, they found them both just charming. And one story of Eliza, she had developed this crush on this guy, Tinch Tillman. And at one point, her family was going off to Saratoga. And they were all staying at the pastures or somewhere. I can't remember. I didn't write this down. But she actually convinced her parents to let her ride off alone and stay alone.
Oh, my.
To go see this dude, which was unheard
of. Yeah, as I say,
that
wasn't good for like hundreds of years later.
And it wasn't, it probably wasn't good for hundreds of reasons, but they trusted her. She was a good girl.
You're the good girl. You would never do anything.
And she didn't.
You wouldn't yank off your bloomers for some young man.
And she would not have. And she did not. But, and again, she had plenty of chaperones in the house. It's not like she was there with all these dudes by herself.
Right.
It was totally proper, except for the fact that she did ride off
alone.
Alone. So, and for like 20 miles.
So for just this one thing, we have to purely trust that she, you know, kept her character and her virtue.
Well, I know the musical doesn't show this, but again, these women were kangaroos. So if she would have fucked somebody, we'd have known it. She would have been instantly pregnant.
I'm not here to malign anyone's character. But hey, a little something with some guy when she was a girl. Good for her, is what I say. Whatever, I hope she got whatever she wanted out of that encounter.
Well, she didn't, because what she wanted was to marry Tinch Tillman, and she never did.
Nope, she got stuck with the dude on the $10 bill instead.
And, okay, one of my favorite stories is of Kitty Schuyler. And Kitty Schuyler was home at the pastures with the children.
Famous for not being in the musical at all.
At all. Her husband sent word that the British were advancing towards Saratoga. So, ignoring all the danger, Kitty took off, heart with horses and one slave. And he was armed, but that was it. And so she's rushing towards danger and all these fleeing people. And they were begging her along the way to turn around. Kitty Schuyler's response, because the farm that she was going to her farm 40 miles away. And people were begging her to turn around. And she claimed, quote, that the general's wife could not show fear, unquote. And when she reached the house, she took everything and everyone of use inside it. And then she set fire to her crops.
Burned her own farm. Mm-hmm.
And she tried to have one of the slaves help her. And he was like, no. He was horrified because it was a hanging offense.
He's like, I'm going to get in trouble for this.
Yeah, he's like, that's a hanging offense.
I would rather you whip me for saying no than for me to die for if somebody else disagrees with this.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, and she didn't...
She trusted another slave enough to give him a gun.
Well, yeah. And again, so she was just like, okay, this is my duty. And she did it all by herself. She set fire to all of her fields. So when the British came to resupply, all they found was scorched earth. And
that's
this is
kind of hardcore.
And yeah, and it also, she tried to convince the farms around her to do the same. So it was like kind of what they were expecting to reach Saratoga and find all these farms and resupply, and they found nothing.
Nice. That was reminding me. I don't know why this popped in my head, but there was that old Jean-Claude Van Damme movie where he played a Cajun. It was the one where he bit off the rattle of a rattlesnake with his teeth. Yes. But Wilford Brimley, you know, the oatmeal diabetes guy, yeah. He played this crazy old Cajun coot in that movie that when the bad guys came, he blew his own house up with dynamite and burned the whole place to the ground just to tell the bad guys to go fuck themselves.
Yes.
So that's what I'm thinking of Kitty Schuyler.
She's Kitty Schuyler.
Fuck you, redcoats.
Mm-hmm. And even though it's like they were they needed to rush back to the house, she decided that she just loaded up everything on her cart and then she took the oxen and sent all the horses to the army.
So the apple didn't fall far from the tree. So this feisty lady had feisty daughters.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, and this one little act of defiance from this one woman was actually something that helped America win the war. Yeah, because British starving to death was kind of a thing.
Yeah, we're going to give you, if we can't have the food, you're definitely going to get it.
And they,
you assholes.
Exactly. So she loaded up everything she could and headed back home.
I'm in favor of not being subjugated to a monarchy, so I'm for it. Go kitty. Not cool with you owning slaves, but what are you going to do?
Well, I mean,
that's a whole longer conversation.
Yeah, that's a whole complicated conversation. But anywho.
Moving right along.
In the winter of 1779, Eliza went to go stay with her aunt and uncle in Morristown, New Jersey. There she met George Washington's handsome young aide-de-camp, Alexander Hamilton.
The meeting is so momentous, we got to see it twice in the
musical. In the musical, and funny enough, this wasn't even their first meeting.
Yeah.
It was their second. The first one, they didn't make much of an impression on each other. Yeah, I had heard
that they'd actually met a couple of times before they finally started to court.
Well, they had really only met once, and he was just delivering a letter. But she went to go stay with her aunt and uncle in Morristown, and they were smitten. Like, it was eyes locked. Love at first sight kind of shit. Granted, he was known for that. She was not his first girl that he tried to court date.
That whole line about the horny tomcat being named after Hamilton by Martha Washington, that was a true story.
And he had a
reputation for being kind of a ladies' man.
Yeah, and he had just... But the thing is, it's like, he had a reputation for being a ladies' man, but he was really, really trying to court these beautiful, rich women. In fact, one of them, right before Eliza showed up, happened to be her cousin.
Yeah, I mean, I know Eliza was not his first attempt at marrying into a...
Into a wealthy family.
Because that's what he was... Moving up in the world was his whole bag.
Yomp.
So they meet. They're totally into each other.
They're into each other. He's sitting in her aunt's parlor drinking fucking gallons of tea. And they're... And her aunt was into it. Like, she would go off and let them be together for a few minutes.
Well, I mean...
unattended.
Everyone said he was a very impressive young man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He was ambitious. He was smart.
He was attractive. Yeah. I mean,
it's so funny because you look at the pictures of how delicate and pasty he looks, but...
All of them are weird looking back then. They were gross.
Yeah, but by the day, everyone talks about him being a really good looking and... And, you know, and apparently just captivating, too. He had a very powerful personality.
Yep. So he had become a fixture in Eliza's aunt's parlor. So Mariah Livingston, who had been Alexander's flame before Eliza came into town. But Mariah was all about it. She was cool with it.
She was like, this is a good match. Let's do it.
So Eliza and Alexander were already exchanging notes, and Eliza and Mariah Livingston were already plotting. So this is where we meet up with our musical 1780s, A Winter's Ball, and the Schuyler sisters were the envy of all. We see Eliza fall helpless for Alexander.
Right.
And they start writing letters. They ask her father for his hand in the song, and the couple ends up with a wedding. And this is condensed, but it's basically what happened. After the ball, the couple start officially courting. Alexander wrote a letter of introduction to Peggy as a, quote, great admirer of her sister, unquote. So befriending Eliza's family.
Getting in with the family to make sure everybody liked him.
Yeah, because, and now granted, during the winter's ball, Angelica came to visit, and Angelica and Mariah, like, did her up for this party. She put it in her, she called it her Marie Antoinette coif. She had her big old hair.
Oh, yeah. That's who you want to look like, Marie Antoinette. Everything worked out great for her.
Yeah, well, they wanted to look like her, you know, before.
Yeah, fashion icon.
Fashion icon, Marie Antoinette. Yeah. Because she was at the time. I mean, shout out to maligned woman. To
poor dead teenage girl.
You want to talk about a fucking maligned woman?
Yeah.
We can talk about Marie Antoinette.
Given a quote that was not hers for shit that wasn't her fault.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
she was just a scapegoat. She's just a kid, literally. So, anyway.
She was blamed for the failures of men.
But cool enough that these chicks wanted to look just like her.
Yeah. Well, you know, they wanted her hairdo.
Yeah.
And some of her hairdos were wild. But yeah, she had this big coiffure.
The big updo thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's a famous picture of her, which we'll talk about later, but she has her big old updo. And she had dark hair. If you look at it, she looks like a blonde, but it's just white powder. Because that's what they would do. They would powder their hair.
They loved powder back then.
I don't know why. Why would you powder your hair to be white? It's so weird. But anywho. And it's like, even when we make movies and stuff, we don't actually show that. It's
powdering
like just
the shit out of everything.
They probably, and it's like they were wearing makeup, but it looked like paste.
Oh, yeah. They look like shit. These people look like ass. It was so weird.
They were smelly as well. Let's not talk about
it.
Okay, so they start basically dating. And at the earliest opportunity, Alexander asks General Schuyler for permission to marry his daughter. And he was open and honest and came clean. He was like, hey, this is my background. These are my prospects. And General Schuyler was, I guess, cool with that. Now,
I got a bunch of daughters. Some mm-hmm. of them will marry better, but at least he liked it. I can see why, because it's like, yes, he came from these humble beginnings, but look at how far he had already risen. Yeah. And he was like an impressive young man. Eliza, I don't have a dollar to my name, an acre of land, a troop to command, a dollop of fame. All I have is my honor, a tolerance for pain,
a couple of college credits, and my top-notch brain. But since he was open and honest, and the couple asked permission, they were granted, Eliza's mother approved. Because he was not going to step on the toes Kitty Schuyler. Because apparently, the only thing General Schuyler was afraid of was upsetting his wife.
See, why am I seeing Red and Kitty Foreman from That 70s Show in my head now? as the Schuyler parents.
It's very funny. But Kitty was really, like, competent as shit.
Alex, you cheated my daughter, you're getting my foot up your ass.
Yeah, no. Nah. Mm. So Kitty gave her blessing, but on the condition that Eliza had to go home to prepare for a big society wedding.
We only do this one way around here.
Yes. I mean, and it's like the traditional, like, Dutch wedding cake. It's like it was basically a fruit cake, and it was bathed in alcohol for months.
Mm.
Like it was literally like based in alcohol covered. It took months to make, but that was their thing. Apparently you're going to get hammered
just
off this very fermented cake.
I mean, I used to bake a booze soaked and ripened fruit cake every year. Mm-hmm. So I know those can be very good.
Yeah, and I'm sure with this, you know, bathed in alcohol plus fermented fruit, this wedding cake was going to get you lit as shit.
Nice. All right, so.
So Eliza went home to prepare for the wedding, and Alexander stayed with the army. And during the engagement, Alexander stayed with the army until right before their wedding, which took place on December 14th, 1780. The next song is Rewind.
Yeah, and that's where we go back, and according to that version, it was Angelica who met him first. And it was I know that it wasn't accurate, but it was the musical's way of trying to establish the complicated relationship Hamilton had with his sister-in-law.
Yeah, and I take issue with this.
Okay.
So it has Angelica toast the happy couple, and the wedding song Rewind takes us back to the winter's ball. And this time she tells a story, and she falls in love with Alexander that night. Except for Beyond Icky, this is also wrong. I find that it also has a few false statements. Let me break down each line.
Okay. Number one. I'm a girl in a world in which my
Okay, that was Angelica's goal. Like, nobody else had to give her anything. She, well, as a young girl, she wanted to marry rich.
I mean, technically,
and she didn't say hoity-toity up.
She didn't say who gave her that job. She said it was her only job. So,
their only job.
So far, it checks out.
My father has no son, so I'm the one who has to social climb the one.
And it's like her parents had 7 children that lived to adulthood, and she had 3 brothers.
Yeah. So that was just bullshit.
That was bullshit.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, she was the oldest, but Peggy was the wit. He's kind of combined these 2 women into one woman. Into one woman.
Well, he's got one.
And then from this moment on, that's pretty much it. It's like Peggy takes on, or Angelica takes on the role of both Angelica and Peggy.
Well, that's the whole, as a writer, I can easily separate the historical versus the adaptation. Like the,
yeah,
like,
and I
like
mean,
her
most
whole
of
point
it's
in the
just...
musical is to show that she's the one who has the mind that can match him. Like poor Eliza is just a dunce by comparison, and she has a good heart, but she can't keep up with him the way, like, these two can, once again, she's like, she met someone on her own level. Doesn't have anything to do with reality of the real woman, but like in the musical, that's her character. So yeah, he just smashed Peggy in there in order to give the woman that would seem like the best intellectual match for Alexander, even if Eliza was the match for his heart.
And Alexander is penniless. That doesn't mean I want him any less.
She sings on, somewhat berating herself for her choice and giving him up and introducing him to Eliza, which of course we know now is bullshit. They already knew each other, and surprise, Angelica was already pregnant with 2 children at this point.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yup. And the song ends with Angelica's private thoughts.
She'll be happy as his bride, and then no, he will never be satisfied. I will never be satisfied.
I want a piece of that.
I'm pretty sure Angelica was just fine with her life. And she was already married. And I'll take you back to that. Because in 1776, Angelica met and fell in love with a mysterious British-born soldier, John Carter.
Of Mars?
So General Schuyler disliked, distrusted, and strongly disapproved of Mr. Carter. And actually, like, just put his foot down and said, no, you are not going to. She didn't even want her associating. So
he shot him in a cannon to Mars and he was never seen again.
Yeah. So in 1777, a possibly pregnant Angelica ran off and eloped with John Carter. When she was in Morristown, she was already a mom with 2 children. And Eliza had actually spent that time with Angelica helping her birth her first 2 children.
So,
and then they were like, Eliza will never get a husband this way. So she was sent away from Angelica to Morristown to be with her aunt and uncle. And her uncle was the physician to General George Washington. So she had an in with that group.
Right.
So after a brief honeymoon at the pastures, the couple return to the army, where Eliza joins Martha Washington's circle of matrons. And Eliza looked up to Martha and thought her to be the ideal woman. She was like, oh, she was just perfect. This older, sophisticated, quiet.
She had it together, but didn't make a lot of noise.
She was a force, but she was a quiet force. And Eliza really respected that, and that's who she wanted to be. She wanted to be a quiet.
She didn't want to be noisy. And
the next song with Eliza is "Stay Alive," and it shows Alexander on stage writing letters and Eliza reading those letters from the balcony. Which, again, the first time I saw it, I didn't even notice her. But if you take a step back, you will notice she's above him with a spotlight, reading letters, walking back and forth. And this is a great time to tell you that fucking letters were the most vexing and exasperating thing in these couples' relationships. Because Eliza could not write enough to fucking please him. And he was always, why won't you write more? Why won't you write more?
And he writes 5,000 words before breakfast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he was just a fucking machine. And so, and she also, she had poor spelling. And she always felt like her letters were silly, especially compared to his.
So she had that in common with George Washington. She was a little self-conscious about her.
Yeah. Know, and it's like, I feel that in my soul because I am not a writer. In fact, I have a learning disability in writing and I'm dyslexic. So this whole thing was hard for me. So yeah. She was like, I don't fucking want to write a million letters.
I'm the Alexander Hamilton of this one.
Yeah. I don't want to write a million letters. Jesus Christ. I'm busy. He never understood that she also had shit to do. So Eliza and her cousin, they hated writing so much and they also found their letters to be silly. So in solidarity, after reading their letters, they would burn them so no one could find them. Because they didn't want to be found lacking.
And lost to history now.
Yeah. So in the next...
My embarrassing letters burn.
Yeah. So in the next scene, we have Alexander coming home to a pregnant Eliza after a fight with Washington. It's like this fight didn't happen like it did on stage. Eliza wasn't even pregnant yet.
Even though they did have the sort of falling out and coming back together again. I mean, it's like, I can see all the shit that was based off of, at least my own understanding, but Miranda didn't give a shit about the actual timeline or specific facts. He was just trying, this is all about vibes.
Yeah, and because of that, I do love this song, because of all of the songs in this musical, this is the song he really gets Eliza at her heart correct. Because this is a song about her she just loved her husband. That was all. She was just a woman who loved her husband. And this showed a clear picture in the lyrics of who Eliza was. She was sweet and she was strong and she was loving and she was kind. The themes of their marriage were in this song through letters almost directly. And neither went into their marriage blindly. They talked at length about what kind of life they would have, because he told her, it was like, this is especially at the beginning, this is gonna be hard. He was living off of soldiers' pay and a stipend. Yeah. That was it.
And she's like, I guess me having a rich family will have to come in handy somehow.
Yeah. So, but Eliza wasn't afraid of hard times. She was a soldier's she was a soldier's wife and a general's daughter. She took that very seriously.
Right. So she knew all about that, and she also probably knew too that just through her family connections that her husband would have job prospects and opportunities, that it was like, somehow we're gonna make this work. Don't worry, we're gonna be fine. I'm rich.
Yeah, so they
family owns a bunch of slaves.
Yeah, we'd be fine.
Yeah, we are it.
So now they also discussed that Eliza needed to be a Roman wife, one that was willing to make sacrifices. Not just a regular wife, but one that was willing to take the dagger.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. I mean, I've the American love of the way the Romans did things is well established.
Yeah. But I do. This is a song about enduring hardship, and she could do it. She says,
we don't need a legacy. We don't need money.
Because I got lots of it already.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was just who she was.
That guy in the backyard works for free.
So, unfortunately for Eliza, the time Alexander spent away from the army couldn't have been pleasant. In fact, it was probably shitty. That whole time sucked ass. So, because Alexander was in a really bad mood. He had a loud fight. He gave Washington his resignation. And they actually rented a house across the river from the army. Which...
Yes. This was like Hamilton's... His just absolute... He was so determined. He had to have a command, and Washington was like, I do not need you getting shot. I need you working for me and here doing the actual important work. But Hamilton was such a climber. He's like, I need to have a command under my belt so I can make a name for myself. And so that's why he got the shittiest little last minute thing where he had no chance of getting hurt. And it was just so sad. Like I can't remember all the details now. It's been too long, but like the details of Hamilton's one little engagement at the very, very end of the war is just so cute.
Well, he wanted it so badly.
Yeah, and finally, he just like, it's like, all right, fine. It's this whole thing's over. Let's just get, because that's literally what it was. Washington yeah. finally gave it when he knew it was all done. And he was like, I'm going to give you a low risk command just to get you what you want to give, throw you the
shut
little bone.
Shut the fuck up.
Well, and he got it. I mean, it's a thing. It's like, you know, the difference between Washington and Hamilton's mm-hmm. background, where it's like Washington came from this very established family, even though he was the younger son of a second marriage and he was always trying to prove himself. So he related a bit to Hamilton. And so he's like, I'll throw this kid a bone at the end because I love this kid.
He did love that kid. Yeah. He loved that kid enough to not want him to die.
No, they had a whole father-son mm-hmm. vibe. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah. And Washington grew to love Eliza like a daughter.
Yeah, no, the families were very close.
They were extremely close. But not this moment. Yeah. Alexander was all
pissy.
He was
throwing a tantrum at the moment.
He was throwing a tantrum.
He was still quite young.
Yes.
He's younger than my son is right now.
So at night, he would go across the river to go drinking with the officers. And he would come back home, quote, late. He would come back late, quote, tipsy and amorous. So that's charming.
So he goes drinking with his army buddies and comes home
back
horny.
And fucks his wife.
Horny and drunk.
And dutifully.
But, you know, once again, he's a guy in his early 20s. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do?
Well, and apparently.
You got a hot
The
wife.
Woman stay. She was a kangaroo, so she was into
she
it.
She was ready.
Guess.
This is what we Dutch women do.
Yes. We are human pez. We just. Keep popping them out. But anyway, in the next song, Alexander goes back and joins the army with his command, finally.
Finally gets his little
He's the all victory. Excited. And he writes his little letters and...
I mean, it's good for him, but it's like, guess what? Nobody... Like, Hamilton, dude. It's like, Alex, buddy, nobody remembers you for that one little fucking battle. Yeah. Nobody cares.
Nobody cared. But Eliza, she goes off stage. And now... What she did in actuality was she went home to the pastures and she brought her best friend with her, who was also like her husband was friends with Alexander in the army. So Marie Charlotte Antle and Eliza joined pregnant Angelica at the pastures to be safe with her family.
So the family is all gathering together for yep. the end of the war.
Yep. And they thought that the pastures would be the safest place for her. And during this time, Eliza found out she was pregnant, and she wrote to him. So it was an actual letter that like, he wrote, but he could not have been more fucking thrilled. His letters were so fucking just
having a kid, this
fast and furious, mm. and it's like, did you have time to do anything else to write letters?
You're having a war hero's kid.
Yeah. So excited. So, but they unfortunately overestimated how safe the pastures were. General Schuyler was betrayed by his Mohawk mistress, Mary Hill.
Whoops.
Yep. And
that's
the house,
what you get for trusting your Mohawk mistress.
Yep. And the house had been on edge even before the wedding.
See, it's still, hold on. It's like just the fact that that was just an aside. Oh, just betrayed by his
Mohawk mistress.
Like, wait, that's a whole other fucking story.
Yeah, wait, let's get back to that.
I know, we don't have to dwell on that.
That was even a footnote just in her biography.
I just have to pause
now
for a second to reflect on the fact that her father had a Mohawk mistress.
Yes.
Okay, let's move it.
Yeah,
right
again, and we know we know everything down to her name, but they still, that was it. It was like, now I want to read General Schuyler's.
We need the story of her, the Mohawk mistress.
Yeah, and how, when Kitty found out, what did she do to him? Because that bitch was feisty. But so they were betrayed, and one particular day, the house got raided. And so the whole family ushered up to an upstairs room, and Kitty realized that she had left her infant daughter downstairs, whoops, sleeping in her bassinet. So without skipping a beat or blinking an eye, Peggy rushes downstairs, grabs the baby, and starts to go back upstairs. And she was stopped by a flying tomahawk pinning her to the railing.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Pinning her, like, got her the dress or something?
Mm-hmm. He did. He got her dress. That's how close he was to hitting her.
Damn. Well, that's, yeah. We hear this.
And even then, Peggy kept her cool because the officer came and asked for her master. And so, not realizing that she was the general's daughter, she just rolled with it and was like, the master's out gathering forces. And so they were like, oh, shit. So General Schuyler, hearing what was going on downstairs, starts yelling out the window. So now they think that reinforcements are coming. So
they're just pulling some bullshit.
So, yeah, and so they fucking, they took off with just some silverware and Peggy pinned with her sister to the railing.
They're convinced that the so they just fucking coming.
So they were convinced the cavalry was coming and booked it. So the Schuyler family was actually saved by Peggy from being captured.
Yeah, the power of bullshit wins yet again.
Yes, and the fact that she was able to do it while, I mean, because it was like facing death.
Yeah, no, that's a hardcore situation when you get a tomahawk pinning you against the wall. Like,
and she was just like, no, he's not here.
Holding the baby.
So,
sorry, dude, I'm not the one you want to kill.
Yeah, so, I mean, but that
meanwhile,
was...
Dad's yelling at the window, all right, boys, let's get him.
Mm-hmm.
That's hilarious.
Yes.
God, it's always stupider in real life yes. than it seems.
Yeah, so the only people they captured were the two soldiers out front keeping watch and a little bit of silverware and things.
Well, good for you, you.
Yeah, so
you
young
bastards.
So young, unmarried Peggy saves her entire family from capture or slaughter.
Yeah, so far Peggy seems like the coolest of the three chicks.
Peggy is the coolest. I mean, honestly, I really just
Peggy the musical needs to come next, or maybe action movie.
Peggy was fun.
Maybe she needs to be the hero in the new Predator.
Okay. So while pregnant, Eliza had another worry outside the normal baby worries. And I'm going to quote from the book. Quote, when camp fever took Martha Washington's son at Yorktown, his 25-year-old widow not only lost her husband, but custody of their two children. The law was not a friend to young widows, even widows to daughters of wealthy families. Even for those lucky few, children and estates passed to fathers and uncles, sons and brothers. For impoverished widows and children, Eliza shuddered to think of the desperate reality of penury in the poorhouse. If something happened to Alexander, Eliza would not get to make decisions on how to raise the baby now growing inside her. Someday, someone would need to do something about it. No one yet had any inkling, herself included, that someday this someone would be Eliza.
Ooh, foreshadowing.
Yeah. So back to our musical, we have reached History Has Its Eyes on You. George Washington sings to Alexander.
I was younger than you are now. When I was given my first command, I led my men straight into a massacre. I witnessed their deaths firsthand.
I sang that very line.
Yep, so shout out to our first crossover.
Yeah, because George Washington really fucked up when he was young and got a bunch of people killed.
Yeah, he did. Well, apparently he was sad about it. So that's good. So if you haven't listened, you can go back to listen to Oh George, because that's fun stuff.
Yeah, listening to...
Fort Necessity.
Fort Necessity. Everybody... Yeah, everybody having their death party in Fort Necessity because Washington was going to get everybody killed.
Yup, yup.
Oh. So, yeah.
Anyway, we go back to the Battle of Yorktown. And now, granted, this is a cool scene. I do like how it was done. And it manages to get little historical details and things kind of jammed in there, which was fun. My favorite being the drinking song, The World Turned Upside Down, which yes. was a real thing. They actually, it was a drinking song, and it was converted to, like, their, I guess, their defeat song for the British. And I was like, that's pretty cool. So, yeah, America wins. Yay.
Now, well, I mean, I'm for it.
Yeah, I'm still for it, although I'd still like healthcare. That'd be neat.
They didn't have it back then, though, so.
They didn't have shit back then. Yeah, you didn't want healthcare back then.
I'm cool with not, you know, with fighting the crown. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So after the battle, Alexander joins Eliza in Albany to recuperate, because the one thing that they don't mention in the musical is he was fucking always sick.
He's sick over and over again, like when he's out on campaign.
He had malaria that he contracted when he was young in the West Indies, and it just came back like every summer. So he was constantly battling being sick.
The whole time he was a soldier, he was laid up all the time.
Mm-hmm. Granted, a lot of soldiers were just because of the conditions. Well,
that's the thing. It's like we never emphasize just how much rolling sickness, you know, not like the cold and flu season, but like waves of just what we would consider plagues. And that was just like, no, that's just the time of year.
Yeah, they would.
And armies, of course, would just get laid low by illnesses, mm-hmm. just like knocking everybody out.
I mean, summer was so bad that a lot of times they didn't even fight in summer. They would just all go back to their camps.
And Hamilton while he had a lot of like resolve, but he had a weakly little constitution. So yeah, he was constantly sick.
Yep.
But of course, Washington had empathy because, of course, he was famous for, you know, as previously discussed, coming off of being a month of shitting himself to death and riding around in his hemorrhoid pillow.
God, yeah. Washington was a monster. Yeah. He really was a monster of a human. I mean, you have to be impressed. You don't have to like him, but you got to be impressed.
He was something else.
Yeah, so they went back to, they had a little cottage on her parents' estate, and she gave birth to her first son named Philip after her father.
One of the other Philips, but not the
one general. Of the other Philips, because Angelica also named her first son Philip.
Yeah, everybody's sucking up to the old man to get all the money in the will.
Yup, yup, yup. So Alexander worked as a tax collector while studying to be a lawyer. And side note, Aaron Burr was also studying to be a lawyer, and he was also using the Schuyler Library. So these two men were actually
they were acquainted.
Yeah.
They were both in the army at the same time.
Yeah, but especially during this point, because they were studying to be lawyers together. And then, so we get to Nonstop, and a lot happens in the song, so we'll break it down. Alexander works as a lawyer in Albany until he goes off to Philadelphia to join the Continental Congress. He also sees Angelica off to London. And Angelica and her husband. She married her rich dude. And now, Angelica married John Carter, who ended up actually being John Barker Church. John's father died when John was young, and his uncle, John Barker, became his guardian. Which, again, and they don't even mention this really in the book. It's just a footnote later. But his mom was still alive. She doesn't get to be his guardian. His legal guardian because
again, we can't have women making decisions about
things. Decisions. So his uncle sent him off to work in the trading house of this wealthy merchant. And also it was like, go do this boring work and also go get well acquainted with this boring ass girl. And so John he was bored. And so he started gambling. And he started gambling heavily. Unfortunately, he was gambling with his uncle's business account.
Whoops.
Yup. So while partying and gambling, John ran up a debt of £10,000, which is $1.5 million in today's money.
Jesus. He was literally giving him a lot of credit.
Yeah. And so...
Don't worry, I'm good for it. I just got to win the next hand.
Yep, and so his uncle, in order to repay him, was going to force him to marry the merchant's daughter. Yep, and so John also at this time got in a duel about something, and so he decided to flee all his problems and possible warrants and changed his name and moved to America. And he said all he really wanted to do was be a soldier, and his uncle wouldn't let him be a soldier. So he left. Never mind that, yeah. He didn't just leave, he fled.
Oh, that's amazing.
Tail tucked. And so he married Angelica, and he married Angelica against her father's wishes. And then once they were married, started running up huge fucking tabs that were, he was just like, oh, just bill it to the general.
My father-in-law's going to love it when he gets the bill for this.
So not only was John... he was kind of a consistent piece of shit.
So Philip Schuyler hated this guy.
Yeah, but during the war, he actually did manage to turn things around and made a lot of money. So he decided that he wanted to go back to London and repay off his debts and start using his real name. So Angelica went from being
Mrs. Carter.
Yeah, Mrs. Carter to being Mrs. Church. And so I want to say Alexander was actually in Philadelphia and he was trying to travel back to Albany to be with his wife and kids. And he was also escorting Kitty Schuyler. And she kept making all these stops. So it was really annoying. But one of the stops they made was in New York City to go see off and Angelica. So he was personally there to see her off, but not because he was in love with her, but because mom wanted to see her one last time before she traveled across the seas. So not quite the lovey-dovey.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I did read some of the correspondence that survived between the two of them, and even then some of the stuff that she wrote, Angelica wrote to her sister. It did seem like there was a certain, like, at least flirtatiousness
their
relationship.
But at the same time, that's who Angelica was. They were all terrible flirts. And she was used to it because Angelica was a flirt. And Peggy was a flirt.
Well, I know once she got over to
And Hamilton Europe. Was a terrible flirt. And yeah, and once Angelica got to Europe, I mean, it went from bad to scandalous.
Yeah, I mean, I know Jefferson was trying to hook up with her. He wrote to her to meet him without her husband more than once.
Yeah, well, they kind of had an open marriage a little bit. They were very European.
Very European, that's how it
was just what they were, you know. And you didn't marry for love in the aristocracy. You married for power and more wealth.
But she did marry him for love, didn't she?
But she did, so I'm sure that might have been a little bit shocker to her.
Now that you got money, I guess we can have this more sophisticated relationship.
And Angelica did get what she wants because, she was really into politics, and eventually he joined the House of Burgesses. And granted, she also thought that British politics were a lot more boring than the exciting new American politics.
Where things were revolutionary.
Yeah, exactly. So the fact that Angelica sings, "He's not a lot of fun," that wouldn't have been accurate at all. John was probably too much fun. He was a lot of fun. I was sort of his issue.
Just ask all my other girlfriends how much fun I have.
So he was a partier and a heavy gambler, and she went off to Europe. Around this time, Peggy also ran off and eloped against her father's permission.
Well, he's just not having luck with these girls listening to him.
No. In fact, Eliza alone was the only one to marry with her father's permission. Of all the daughters, she was the only one. Every single one ran off, starting with Angelica.
Well, it's a revolutionary period where everybody's like, you don't have to disobey the daddy figure.
Now, granted, they didn't disapprove of who Peggy was going to marry. It was the fact that they kind of, he was younger and they thought he was too young to be married. He needed to wait a few years. But Peggy was getting on and was not going to take her chances.
She's like, I'm getting a little long in the tooth, mom and dad. I'm going for this young one stud.
Yep. So Peggy ran off one night with the patroon Stephen von Rensselaer. Now I'm going to quote from the book. Quote, Stephen Van Rensselaer was a scrawny young man. He had high, dark eyebrows, a long, thin nose, friendly eyes, an easy laugh, and extremely deep pockets. His fortune still ranks today, centuries later, as one of the largest ever in American history. Unquote. So yeah, Peggy wasn't taking her chances on this one. She hopped out a window and ran.
This one's mine.
Yeah, and you know what? In my opinion, her and her husband actually had a really good marriage. They were really rich. They were really happy. She was a lot of fun. Good for her. Yeah.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. They were like, oh, he's young. And she was like, I'm not. Fuck you. So Peggy B and Peggy did what the fuck she wanted. And I love her for it. Okay. So we end Act One with Alexander being asked to join Washington's cabinet and becoming Secretary of Treasury. Eliza singing, "Isn't This Enough?" And, of course, it is not.
No. Have you met me?
And so he sings back dramatically. I am not throwing away my shot. End act one.
I don't want to be some lawyer. I want to matter.
I want to matter. So in between this time, Eliza gives birth to her second child, a daughter named for her favorite sister, Angelica, on September 25th, 1784. And Alexander and Eliza moved to Philadelphia to join Washington and report to the to work at the Treasury.
So ending act one will also end part one of the Eliza Hamilton story. But guess what, you guys? We will be back next week.
For act two!
For act two, part two, where Bambi is going to tell us all, hopefully, all the shit that Eliza Hamilton did during and after her husband's death.
Yeah.
Because she was alive for a really long fucking time after he was gone.
She was literally under... 50 years. Yeah, she was under half her lifetime when Alexander died.
There's a lot more of her life without him than with him.
Yeah, so actually it's like Act 2 is probably going to be longer than Act 1.
That's where the...
Because she was, at this point, we are ending with her in her 20s.
Excellent. All right, well, that's where we're going to end things for now, but we'll be back. Be sure to go to chainsawhistory.com to check out all of our regular episodes and other bonus content, like the Value Of series, where Bambi reads me children's books from the 1980s, and I force her to go along the life of Indiana Jones in our series called No Time for Love. Dr. Jones jumped up to the point where he fell in love with the princess of Austria-Hungary.
Yeah, weird.
Which is really weird. So you can also support us. So if you go to the main central link on chainsawhistory.com, you will see a way you can either subscribe with a paid membership. You can throw a tip in the tip jar, or you can find a few other ways you can help out. And we're going to be looking at other stuff like merch coming soon. You're finally going to get your Chainsaw History t-shirt and tank top.
Nice.
Throw pillow. Who knows? So check back with us next week to see how this whole Eliza Hamilton thing shakes out. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.